Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. And greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, final program of the year. We're coming to you live from eastern Kentucky at the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains. Our IQ window forecast, 31 degrees, possibility of snow tonight. The solar wind, up to 340 kilometers per second. 2009 is ending with a flurry of sunspots. The latest is sunspot 1039, which formed yesterday and is now crackling with low-level solar flares on the other side of our planet. This could be the beginning of the flare season we spoke about in Volume 2 of The Arc of Millions of Years. So far, 65% of the days in December have brought sunspots, a sharp increase in percentages compared to the earlier months of 2009, when sunspots were surprisingly rare. All six of December's sunspot groups have been members of the new Solar Cycle 24. These numbers could herald the sun's awakening from the deepest solar minimum in nearly a century and a livelier sun in 2010. What does that mean for us? Could mean global warming is back. It's going to resume. Hopefully man's activities are not enough to push her over the edge of sustainability of life. The solar system is passing through an interstellar cloud that physicists say should not exist. In December 24th issue of Nature, a team of scientists reveal how NASA's Voyager spacecraft have solved the mystery. Using data from Voyager, we have discovered a strong magnetic field just outside the solar system, explains lead author Merav Ofer, a NASA heliophysicist, guest investigator from George Mason University. He says this magnetic field holds the interstellar cloud together that solves the long-standing puzzle of how it can exist at all. He says, about 10 million years ago, a cluster of supernovas exploded nearby, creating a giant bubble of million-degree gas. The fluff is completely surrounded by this high-pressure supernova exhaust and should be crushed or dispersed by it. But it isn't. And I can tell you, as the Earth goes through this area of high-energy particles, these particles come into our atmosphere, generate all kinds of photons that we've never seen before, and photons carry information. The information irradiates us and the food that we eat and entangles us with that information, and some of that may be altering our own DNA. One of the things that we realize in cosmological physics, astrophysics, is that when these supernovas occur, they usually consume all of the matter within the blast area, convert it to energy, and then it collapses from energy back into matter. All of that matter is then entangled one with another. That means that what happens to one corner of the cosmos happens immediately, instantaneously, to the other corner of the cosmos. What happens in the Earth happens in the human, and what happens in the human happens in the Earth, and we'll cover that a little more tonight as we get deeper into our discussion. Only 18 earthquakes around the world in the last 24 hours. However, in the last week, we have seen something we have not seen in a long time. We have seen a volcano. Active in the Philippines, the governor of the Philippines says, if you choose to remain here on this island, you will die here. Could it be that eruption is so imminent that that land we once knew as the Philippines is about to disappear? Could it mean that the economy, the ecology, and the sociology of that area is about to change through the rearrangement of geology in that area? We are anxiously awaiting, and hopefully things will settle down and cool off and the Philippine people can return to their homes. Also something that we said was going to happen many months ago. In fact, it's part of the chapter called The Watchers in Volume 2 of The Ark of Millions of Years. We predicted that this would happen. We were hoping it would happen before now. But Iranian security forces beat protesters in central Tehran on Saturday. That was yesterday. It said protests occurred in at least three areas. Imam Hossein Square, Pol-e-Chubi, and Ferdowsi Square. The report could not be independently confirmed because the Iranian government has banned foreign media from covering opposition protests. His memorials, this is a certain a holy man, his memorials have brought out not only the young urban activists who filled the ranks of earlier protests, but also older, more religious Iranians who revered Montazeri on grounds of faith as much as politics. Tens of thousands marched in his funeral procession in the holy city of Qom on Monday, many chanting slogans against the government. I have always maintained that the majority of Iran is against the warlike rhetoric of the president. One day he will announce a war and no one will come. Perhaps we are not far away from global rejection of war between humans. Only three space missions are planned in 2010, aimed to learn more about the sun and the climate and the oceans of Earth, NASA officials said. Two of the missions will examine the concentration of salt in oceans and the presence of aerosol particles, such as soot, in the atmosphere. The third mission will study the sun's effect on space weather, including solar flares that sometimes interfere with communication networks on Earth, the Orlando Sentinel reported Saturday. That's yesterday. All of these missions appear to be aimed at gathering information pursuant to the 2012 end times predictions. Hopefully, it will provide enough credibility to the Mayan warnings given 1,500 years ago. Don't go away. 40 seconds. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. We'll be back with more X Squared Radio after this. X Squared Radio heading into its fifth year, 2010. We would not be here without you. You can help keep the lights on by going to xsquaredradio.com. Click on the subscribe button and you can listen to hundreds and hundreds of hours of interviews with some of the world's best authorities on many subjects. In fact, that's what we're going to cover tonight. This is the last program of the year, so we're going to recap things that happened over the year. Phone lines will be open all night. 530-413-4511, 530-413-4511, or 530-413-4515. If those lines fill up, I'll give you more lines you can call in on. Tonight, we have open lines for your phone calls. We are going to cover the events and topics we discovered and discussed in the year 2009. Everyone else is doing it on television, but they didn't discuss the things we discussed here on X Squared Radio. We are very proud members of the PBS Radio Network. Used to be said if it's not mainstream, It's here on BBS Radio. We have grown as a network, added more and more hosts, and broadened the audience. And I can say definitively that more people cruise through BBS Radio network as far as internet radio than any other network in the nation online. And X Squared Radio has consistently, over the last 2 years, been in the top 10%. In fact, in many cases, we have been in the top 1% of those programs. That is because of you. We interview the guests, we read the books, but it's because you keep coming back here that we're here. And as long as we're doing what you want us to do, discuss the things that in the depth that you like to see them, I know you'll keep coming back. If there's anything that you would like to see change in the format, in the website, in the interactivity of this program, please write me at bagnew@x2-radio.com. bagnew@x2-radio.com, or you can sign up and subscribe to the newsletter, and you can tell us anything you like as you sign up, and we'll try to incorporate it in the program. You can always reach us by phone when we're live at 530-413-4511, or you can reach us on Skype. All you have to do is search for Brooks Agnew, and you'll find me, and you can send me questions over Skype while we're live, and we'll put it on the air. That way you don't have to listen to your voice on the radio. This year, we learned that our sun is part of a binary star system with Sirius as its orbiting sister. This explained the secret of the alignment of the Great Pyramid in Egypt. How did this affect the way we think about this amazing structure? Well, for one thing, we decided once and for all that it was not the Egyptians who built the Great Pyramid. And furthermore, we agree that the Great Pyramid was the first pyramid. The rest were built much later and were cheap copies. And if any of you have any ideas, any feedback, any thoughts about the subjects that we're going to cover tonight, and we're going to try to cover every single one that we talked about in the year 2009, we do want you to call in. We do want you to offer your thoughts. If there's something about the program or the guest or the point that we made that changed your life or made you have a different outlook at how things are in the world, how you fit into the world, what your place is in the world, and maybe what your thoughts are for the future of the human race, we want you to call in and share those things with us tonight. We've just gone through the Christmas season. Some just call it a holiday season. It has so many names now and so many different traditions that we try to accommodate. But in this country, it has always been called Christmas. So it is a time of giving, a time of new life, a time of sharing, a time of forgiveness. And hopefully you are all in that mood tonight as well. As we finish off the holiday weekend, many of you have returned home from visiting family or had family just leave your house, sometimes in somewhat of a mess, not helping with the dishes as they leave, but that's okay. They were able to come by and have fun and enjoy one another and keep the spirit of family going. So when we talk about the pyramids, we were talking about Walter Cruttendon. He taught us about the importance of our sun and how rare the Earth is in space. And he was not alone in telling us that our ancestors came here from the stars and they may well return again. In fact, many of you believe that they have already returned in many forms. Some of you maintain that you have returned already in the form of a human being, that you were born here by body, but your spirit, your thoughts, your being, your personality comes from somewhere else, that you're a recent addition to the family of man on this planet. If you feel that way, I want you to give us a call tonight at 530-413-4511. There are others that are convinced that the ancients were either aliens or were seeded by aliens or were at least I won't say interfered with, but certainly intervened with in order to create modern man from whatever animals or lower life forms were here on the earth. And there are certainly a no small number of books out there covering that. We talked to a few authors here on this program about that very subject. But there is the idea that off-worlders have been here and are still here. And, of course, when we look at it logically, you could say, okay, I saw one at the mall while I was shopping, I'm pretty sure. And I know there are several of you out there that feel the same way. But seriously, if aliens came here in flying objects, flying cities, they would not park themselves in the Midwest. They would not park themselves in Houston or in Washington or in Philly. No, two-thirds of the planet is water. And only a very, very small amount of that water is sailed on at any given moment, especially the open oceans. There are seaways that have been used for hundreds of years that may take advantage of currents in the sea to expedite the movement of goods back and forth from continent to continent around the planet. But the vast majority of the ocean is completely untraveled. One or two ships a year may travel that way. If I was coming from another world and I was in charge of a ship or a group of ships 100 miles in diameter, 200 miles in diameter, the safest, easiest place to put these down and leave them unmolested for millennia is at the bottom of the sea. If I was able to manipulate the ocean back away from the hull, create a force field bubble, as it were, to where my ship was not under the hundreds of atmospheres of pressure at the bottom of the sea, I would rest there without anyone knowing I was there. I would send scout ships and explorers around the planet for hundreds of years and return back, and no one would ever know I was there. In fact, by the time the ocean silt covered me and barnacles grew on me or around this bubble, I would be completely undetectable. And so the idea that there are multiple races living here on this planet is a little like the church coming to Galileo and telling him to stop looking through his telescope. And Galileo pleading with them with every amount of logic and scientific rhetoric that he could, just step forward and look in the eyepiece. Just look in the eyepiece and look at this planet. Look at the moons around this planet. All you have to do is just look and you'll be convinced. And they would not look. And oftentimes what we say on this program is just, please, just step forward and look in the eyepiece, will you? Will you just buy the book of the guest that's on the program and read it? You can make up your mind after you read it. You can make up your mind after you listen to the program. Many of you have said, I'm convinced, I understand what you're saying. One of our favorite listeners said that we are literally their children, and we're a colony. It could be. You know, we're going to cover tonight some amazing guests that have been on this program that have made some stunning, startling decisions and discoveries that have shown us why mysterious events happened when they happened and what their cause was and what their results were. It's going to be amazing. You know, we discussed the relationship between the living and the recently departed as well. No, this wasn't a real mystical program. It wasn't at all like that. Yes, we discussed mediums and things like that. But in two interviews with Dr. Gary Schwartz, we learned about the God experiment. We heard irrefutable evidence that the spirits of those who have passed on can and do communicate through mediums to the living. It takes a talent that few possess. And we found out there are charlatans and there are masters in the art. And we also posed the question to Dr. Schwartz, why is it that the spirits of those recently departed don't tell of their past lives before the most recent one. Why don't they speak of soulmates or dear friends that they have found after many lifetimes of separation? Why don't the dead tell us about their ancient lives and their experiences on this and other worlds? Well, Dr. Schwartz found this question so alluring and so logical in the sequence of his other two books about this subject that he is going to perform a series of experiments and measurements and bring the answers back to us, perhaps this next year in 2010. That is going to be an amazing program, because who better to tell us about when all these memories and all these lifetimes of experience come slamming up to the present in memory than those who have recently departed? We think we can find a way to do this experientially, and we can do it with empirical data, and we can do it in a double-blind and perhaps even triple-blind manner so that it is scientifically profound. We're involved in that experiment, and we want to bring it to you first right here on this program. If you have any questions, any wonders about this, any experiences with this, please give us a call, 530-413-4511 or 530-413-4515. We used to have, I think this might be the week that we may have a global toll-free number. I don't know if we've got it yet. I'm going to check with the studio. If we do, we'll give that number out. But I think most of the world does not have toll-free access. They do have access to regular area codes, and so they can call in. But we want to make sure that everybody has a chance to call in. And these are the numbers, 530-413-4511 or 530-413-4515. Okay, I just sent him a message asking for that phone number, and we'll find out if we've got it or not. The next thing that we talked about, we spoke to Dr. Sam and Ricky Rohr about the Raelian movement. What if we told you there was an alien race that was the designer of all life on Earth? What if we told you that there was a spokesman here on Earth now who has written down his encounters with this alien race known as the Elohim? Now, it's interesting, this Raelian movement. Those of you that have read the book or have downloaded the online book at rael.org, after the program, many of you wrote us and said that you had other thoughts about their claims, that we only live a mortal life and then dissolve back into a collective consciousness without individual identity. And I would like to hear your thoughts on the Raelian movement. Positive or negative, explorative, we would like to hear your thoughts. The Raelian movement. It was an interesting program and opened my eyes to some things, and other things, you know, left questions. And questions are to be answered by the explorers on this program. And every once in a while, and December is one of those times as we circle through and intertwine the holidays, it's sometimes difficult to get these guests to come on during that period. You know, it's understandable. They're traveling and they have busy schedules, and we understand that. And so, you, the Earth Explorers, are the ones who call in and make this program amazing. We also decided last week, because the third hour last week was literally on fire. It was just one of those energetic times when the subject matter and the callers and the message all came together at one time, and it really made for something exciting. We decided last week that we're not going to have hours 1, 2, and 3 anymore. We're just going to have all our threes, 3, 3, and 3, because this is where the magic happens. This is where the foundation that we laid in the first 2 hours gels, And this is where all of the listeners begin to get involved and understand what's going on and participate. And we also realize that, you know, we're on from 8 to 11 Eastern time, which is 5 to 8 Pacific time, which is rather early in the evening for the West Coast. But that's okay. We're trying to accommodate everyone. We found this time slot over the last 5 years works the best for most of our audience. For those of you in Europe and in Israel and other places, it's rather late, okay? We're talking pretty close to 4 o'clock in the morning. Is it worth staying up to listen to X Squared Radio live? You bet it is. But in case it isn't for you, we always have the archives. And you can access those simply by clicking on the subscribe button at xsquaredradio.com. It's less than a couple dollars a month. If you want to buy a year's access, it's $20. That's less than a cup of coffee a month in order to listen to hundreds of hours of interviews with some of the best experts in astronomy, cosmology, biology, oceanography, space exploration. We try to cover the higher sciences. We bring the past and the future together to meet here in the present where we can discuss it openly. And we take on just about any subject that relates to that. Normally, we do not cover conspiracy theories, and we don't cover ghosts. There are programs that do that, and there are plenty of them out there, but we try to take the higher sciences and explore them to their end. We also, later in the year, early in the spring, we discussed crop circles this year in great detail. We had Ed and Chris Sherwood on, who are notably world experts in crop circles. And I want to know your thoughts and experiences with crop circles. First of all, are they real? Are they fake? Is there a mixture of real ones and man-made ones out there? And if they are real, what are they trying to say? How do you feel when you look at the circles? Are you amazed that they can be made in broad daylight or at night without anyone seeing the artist? No footprints, no tire tracks, no lights at all, even during an English rainstorm. Some of the most complex and amazing, huge, complex crop circles made in the middle of an English rainstorm on a government facility. Not a single clue, no evidence of anyone out there mashing down wheat to make these stupendous designs. Also take into consideration that the wheat that's harvested from inside the circles tends to make a bread that is extremely energetic. Now, there are also measurements, electronic measurements, magnetic measurements that are made inside these circles. The genuine ones really have an amazing energy about them. By amazing, I mean unique. Inside the circle, outside the circle, this is very, very scientifically significant. And there are also evidence out there that some of them are faked. Now, it's kind of interesting that the two gentlemen that came forward in England several years ago that said that they had faked most of the crop circles and even had the patterns drawn out. It was kind of interesting because as you looked at the timeline that these crop circles were made, and also the breadth of geology or geography in which they were made, you begin to have your doubts about the fakers, because it's not one region of the country. In fact, it's multiple countries. There were complex crop circles found in South Africa, in South America, in the United States, in Canada, in Mexico. They were found in Germany, Norway, and they were even found in the snow fields of Alaska. How in the world did these two gentlemen get to all those areas and fake these crop circles? You see, even their claim that they had faked the crop circles didn't seem to hold water. Maybe they went out there and demonstrated how they did one or two, but you know, on close examination of the base stem of the wheat plant, it's nothing like the genuine crop circles. These nodes at the bottom of the plant are not exploded like the ones at the bottom of the crop circle plants. The height and thickness of the plant inside the circle is noticeably higher, noticeably more dense, noticeably more mature and more fruitful than the wheat outside the circle. What is it that makes the wheat lay down all in one direction, nice and flat, without signs of crushing the seeds, without defoliation of the plant whatsoever? You know, if you go out there and you stomp on wheat, you're going to get some of the wheat to be husked. It's going to fall out onto the ground. This doesn't happen in genuine crop circles. Only in the fake ones, only in the ones where you're out there stomping on the wheat, you're sort of threshing the wheat out there, especially since you're trying to do it in one night. You know, this isn't a multiple shift operation. You got to go out there in darkness with no lights, and you have to make this happen overnight. And that's just not easily done. And it's not easily done repeatedly. And besides, I can tell you, when the sun comes up, you're going to realize your string got hung up on something and the circle's not quite exactly round or something didn't line up. I mean, gosh, can you imagine two guys out there? No, Fred, look, Fred, left. No, your other left, Fred. Fred, step back inside the circle. You're making a mess of the whole thing. Have you ever seen a botched crop circle? Have you ever seen a crop circle that was supposed to be round that came out looking like an egg? You ever seen a spiral that came out looking like a square? No, you haven't. And I can tell you, artists would make mistakes out there in the middle of the night, 300 feet away from one another without screaming and yelling at one another. Well, maybe they could go out there with special boots and black clothing and radios and night vision goggles. Sure, maybe. But that's not what we see. That's not what's happening out there. These things are happening in a matter of minutes, sometimes a matter of seconds, and they've been witnessed over and over and over again happening. Now, Ed and Chris Sherwood, and if you really want to know, you go cropcircleanswers.com and look at their website. Look at the catalogs that they have. Look at the pictures that Lucy Pringle has put together. Look at the studies. Look at the videos that are out there. And come back and tell me what your thoughts are. 530-413-4511, right here on X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. We're here every Sunday night live between 8 and 11 p.m. Eastern Time. We've been on since 2005, and we're getting ready to start our fifth year, and it's been nothing short of amazing. What we're doing tonight is we're doing a recap of the subjects that we covered in 2009, and some of these are going to be rather poignant. They're going to stimulate feelings and thoughts inside of you, and that's the idea. We are a scientific talk radio program, but we also go into the consciousness of the science. We really want you to integrate the science and the scientific method into your thought process as you discuss these higher things, mysteries that occur on the earth and in the universe, and as we try to discover the answer, how they pertain to us, what do they mean, how long have we been here, who are we? So think about how you feel when you look at the circles, and are you amazed that they can be made in broad daylight or at night without anyone seeing the artist, like a big magic trick over and over and over again? People have even talked about ice circles being formed in lakes on the water. These are ice crystals that form on the water in the form of a crop circle. Complex designs, spirals, circles within circles, all kinds of neat designs in ice on the water. Oh yes, one more thing. If they are all fake, then how do the fakers make their way to all these countries and lay out these complex designs? Someone out there listening tonight has feelings about this subject, and we would like to hear those feelings. We also learned how medical professionals are beginning to incorporate the Eastern philosophies and practices into their healing arts. Dr. John Turner did a wonderful job explaining how Jorai has helped his neurosurgery patients. Are they miracles? Do we really know what the placebo effect is and why it heals as many people as the drugs they were meant to simulate? Did you know that? Did you know when they put together the clinical experiments with a drug, they also incorporate a placebo drug? This is a double-blind experiment. Let's just say they take 1,000 subjects. They often take many more than that. And they give a portion of the population a placebo, and they give a portion of the population the actual drug. Now, presumably, all the people in the test field have the symptom or the disease that they're trying to treat with the drug. Seems rather of a dirty trick, doesn't it? Oh, yes, we're going to give you this drug, and it's going to cure this. It's going to make this pain go away. It's going to make this symptom subside. But really, it's just sugar. We're not going to tell you that, though. But lo and behold, when the results come back, the placebo group has very close to the same cure rate as the drug group. So what do? Well, they immediately eliminate the placebo group. They don't report that. Instead, they report what happens in the drug group. And they refine that until their creation, this new chemical, this new compound, is released on the market at exorbitant profits. Of course, some of this is justified, because look how long it takes for drugs to come to market, and once they do, you only have 20 years to make all the money you can make out of it, and then, why, the patent runs out, and then here comes Walmart with their Equate brands, lookalikes that are supposed to act just like the very same thing. They have the same formula written on the back of the box, active ingredients, blah, 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 and exactly the right amounts. But guess what? You take a Sudafed and you take an Equate Sudafed, they look the same. They smell the same. They're the same color. The ingredients are the same. But Sudafed works and Equate doesn't. Something about that. Hard to tell. So, did you also know that there has been done minor surgery as a placebo? Oh, yeah. Minor surgery as a placebo. Now, come on, people. That's not something you can fake, right? But there is a common outpatient knee surgery that cleans up the surfaces of the knee joint and irrigates the debris away from the cavity, and then they deflate the knee and suture it up. And usually it's aging people to play tennis or softball or golf, and they do a lot of walking, and their knee begins bothering. It gets inflamed. It gets water on it, and it's uncomfortable. So they go to the doctor, and the doctor, oh, yeah, we have a common procedure. We make 3 incisions. With one of the incisions, we inflate and irrigate the knee. With the other one, we go in with a scope, and the other one, we go in with a set of tools. And we scrape the joint and clean up the bone and make it nice and smooth again so that everything moves nice and smooth. And then we irrigate it, close it up, put a little cortisone in there and suture it up. As soon as the numbness wears off, you can begin some light exercise. And before you know it, you'll be back on your feet pain-free. So here's what they did. They draped the knee from the view of the patient, and they place a black and white video camera to view the knee for the patient. The patient gets to see the operation through a black and white screen. That way they don't actually see blood in full color. They numb the knee with a local anesthetic, and they make 3 small incisions. And then they splash water around in a bowl, and they tug on the knee a few times, and then they sew up the incisions and let the patient go home with 3 Band-Aids on their knee. Yep, that's it. They never invade the knee at all. And guess what happens? Sure enough, they are cured. The patient thinks, really believes, that they had the surgery. I mean, come on, they were there. They were awake. They watched the whole thing on TV. They could feel the pressure and movement on their knee. But actually, no surgery was done. And yet, in almost every single case, the inflammation went away, and the patient returned to golf or tennis with no further symptoms, much to the disbelief of the arthroscopic surgeon who was supposed to do the surgery. I mean, come on, if it didn't fix him, he would just say, well, okay, come back, okay, we'll do it again, and this time we'll do it more thorough and go in through the same incisions and actually do the surgery. There's actually no harm to the patient done whatsoever, no permanent harm. except lo and behold, they're cured. So this is a surgical placebo. So people, what power does the mind have? What power does the convincing of the actual essence of consciousness of a human being have over the condition of the health of the body? One of the stories told by Dr. Bruce Lipton was, it's a classic story, and I can't remember the name of the physician, but if you really want to know this story, buy the book, The Biology of Belief. It has sold well over 1 million copies out there. It reads very well. Dr. Bruce Lipton was a medical school instructor down in the Caribbean, and has turned out a fabulous work. But as the story goes, a man came in to an oncologist who diagnosed a man with cancer of the esophagus, esophageal cancer, and basically told him he had 6 months to live. The doctor had seen it many times before. He was very nonchalant and very confident about his diagnosis. This is before laryngoscopy was routinely done. And sure enough, 6 months later, not to the surprise of the doctor, not to the surprise of the patient, and not to the surprise of any of his family, he died. Fell asleep one day and didn't wake up. Surely he died. And so they did an autopsy. And lo and behold, the man did not have esophageal cancer. Oh, he died of esophageal cancer. He just didn't die from it. He believed he had it. He terminated his own life because he believed it so strongly. And it didn't surprise anyone. Never again did that doctor tell anyone they had 6 months left to live. Never. As it turns out, the consciousness of the human being is part of the environment that controls which proteins are made by the genes of the human body. You know, we don't have enough genes to have one protein per gene. We make a lot more proteins than we have genes. That means that each gene has a choice of proteins that it can make. Well, gee whiz, how does it make its choice? How does it make up its mind? Well, the idea is it doesn't have a mind. The cells themselves just run a program that's been set up and recorded in the cell wall, and it runs just like a hard drive, just like a flash drive. It can't think. It just runs the program. But who writes the program? Ah, that's the question. We used to think it was the genes in the nucleus. Not true. We remove the nucleus and the cell continues right on living. And not only does it continue to live, it defends itself against toxins, it respirates, and it can do everything a cell with the nucleus can do except divide, except replace itself. It lives out its life and perishes, not to be replicated, because there's no genetic material, no nucleus to make the division. But what's running the program? Well, it turns out it's the liquid crystal on cell wall. So the answer, or the question to the answer, who writes the program, is we do. Our environment writes the program. What we eat, how much water we take in, how much salt we consume, how much sunlight we're exposed to, how much sleep we get, how much stress we're under, what kind of peas and carrots we eat, how much alcohol do we smoke? All of these things affect the environment, the choices of proteins that are made by these genes. But the most overlooked thing, the thing that keeps rearing its mystical head time after time after time, is the human consciousness. It gets involved in the health of that being. It gets integrally involved in the health of that being. And it's not just mind over matter. It's mind consciousness becomes matter. Consciousness gets involved in the production of the proteins themselves. And so a being who believes that he's only going to live 100 years, because that's how long my father lived, guess what? That's exactly how long he lives, plus or minus. But you know, it's kind of interesting what's happening globally even. The new 55 is the new 40. Yeah. When my parents were 55, they were old. Now that I'm 55 or approaching it, I don't feel 55. I can still compete with my 30-year-old friends on the tennis court. Why? Is it because my genetics? No, it isn't. It's because I don't think I'm old. And you don't think you're old, unless you do. If you think you're old and sickly, I have a strong feeling you're going to follow that suit. But if you think you're young and beautiful, if you think you're young and svelte, if you think you don't have to carry around that extra 140 pounds, guess what? It will fall off of you. And it will fall off of you so much quicker than you can imagine. And there's also one other thing. It is the amount of love that's involved in the equation. You know, hatred has a way of aging someone. Have you ever, you know, one of the most public beings that we look at least in our country, is the president. Oh, we elect this president and he's so young and he's so out there and he's in his 50s and he's ready to go and he's strong and he's in shape and he's jogging and you know he's healthy, you know he's going to hang in there, and you look at him 4 years later when he runs for re-election. And you go, holy cow, who is this guy? Look at the wrinkles on this guy. Look at the gray hair on this guy. Look at the way he won't look you in the eye. Look at the way he can't finish a sentence without stuttering. What happened to this guy? This isn't the same guy that won the primaries against 10 competitors 4 years ago. What happened to him? Because he got dropped into an environment that was full of hatred and mistrust. And it took its toll on him. And his love could not overcome it. It overcame him. How much love do we have for ourselves is directly proportional to how much love we can have for another. And it's exponentially important for how much people can love us. People cannot love a being who hates. People cannot love a being who hates himself. Who does not love himself. Love and consciousness and evil and consciousness go hand in hand. And I don't mean evil like good and evil. I mean evil like fear. Fear is so much more energetic than love. And it's so much easier to fall into fear than it is love. I say, make a conscious effort and just swap them out. See what happens. Try it for 30 days. I promise your tummy will be flatter. So UFOs made it even more dramatic showings this year all around the world. By the way, I don't want you to forget our phone lines are open. 530-413-4511. And if you stack that line full, it's 530-413-4515. We thought we were going to have one number to fit all this year, this week. Evidently, that's not ready yet. My producer will let me know if that's the case, and then we can give you one number to fit all around the world. I'm pretty sure by the first Sunday of next year. We're going to have that ready for you. You know, one of the things that also plays an important part in this program this year, we decided to dump virtually all of our commercials. The only thing we want you to pay attention to is that we do have an online store, and there are a variety of books and DVDs there that you can buy. We are going to make a major announcement on the expedition here shortly, first program of 2010. We're going to make an announcement on the upcoming expedition and how you can get involved, how you can be a part of history. The other thing is that we'd like to talk about the Ark of Millions of Years. All three volumes are being sold as a trilogy with special shipping prices. And if you buy the trilogy, you get the first two volumes in audio version sent to you in the receipt. Music, we have since replaced our commercials with music because people like to make a trip to the fridge or they like to sit there at their workstations and listen to the music. Recently, we have added Lisa Gerrard to our playlist, And that is what we're going to listen to now as we take about a 4-minute break and get ready for hour two of X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. Gerard and Peter Bork, The Unfolding. Very emotional stuff. It is what music is supposed to do to you. For you, I should say. And that's why we like to use music on the program. It's just, it's a little bit better than listening to a bunch of commercials and gosh, you get enough commercials everywhere else. If you want to buy something and support the program, you can easily do that just by going to the online store. Enough said. Let's talk about UFOs. Hour 2, X Squared Radio, final program of 2009. By the way, I want to make a correction. Last week we were talking about the movie Avatar, and I went on and on about John Cameron. And one of my listeners wrote me immediately after the program and said, look, nice work, but it's James Cameron. Okay, James, sorry about that. James Cameron. And I want to extend the invitation again. Last week, the movie was kind of fresh, you know, out making its first weekend debut. And I predicted last weekend that this weekend it would maintain its number one position no matter what came out. And it did. I can tell you the IMAX theater was sold out every show of every day this weekend. Most of the people in the theater had already seen it once, some in 3D, some in 2D, but they had to see it again because there were so many messages on so many levels in that movie. And I want to extend the invitation again. If you saw the movie Avatar, I want you to call in and I want you to tell me what you thought about the movie. Not the special effects. I want to know what thoughts the movie provoked in you. I want to know what connections you made while you were watching the movie. I want to know about your emotions. I want to know about your feelings and maybe some changes of your mind that occurred. And call us, 530-413-4511. We'll be back in 40 seconds with more X Squared Radio. X Squared Radio, getting ready to enter its fifth year on BBS Radio Network. We would not be here without you. So let me know you're out there. Call in 530-413-4511. We're covering the subjects we talked about in 2009. Let me tell you something, people. 2010 is going to be an amazing, amazing year on a lot of levels. There's going to be a lot of challenges, which means there's room for challengers to step forward, clear the hurdles, and let's write some history together. UFOs made even more dramatic showings in 2009. One buzzed the inaugural speech between the Washington Monument and the Capitol. It was caught on film, and it was played on the net. One stopped hearts in Phoenix again and caused the governor to come out and say, by the way, I misspoke before when I was governor. There really were lights over Phoenix, and they really were UFOs. They weren't military parachutes, and sorry, I didn't mean to misspeak on that. I'm sorry. We had a caller on the line, and we didn't know about it, but please call back. Call back. No problem. We just had a, you know, we have a lot of programs going right now, and we're scattered all across the planet. I know you don't realize this, but the internet has formed a new neural network around the planet, and our minds are being united from Israel to California to Kentucky to Canada to Australia to Japan to China. You're listening and you're contributing by Skype, by email, and some of you are ready to call in. So don't forget, it's 530-413-4511. If you tried to get through and couldn't, please try back. We're here. We're listening. We have staff on hand. If we missed your call, we're sorry. Please call back. When I talk about a UFO buzzing the inaugural speech between the Washington Monument and the Capitol, this UFO went by at about, 140, 150 miles an hour. It was caught on film. This is not a digital camera. This was a regular movie camera that was filming the masses there in front of the Washington Monument. The UFO flew overhead somewhere around 400 feet off the ground. And and it went right through the camera lens, right from right to left. Okay, here is our new number, globally, 415-762-1161. I'll give it to you one more time, 415-762-1161. One size fits all, anywhere on planet or off planet. If you can get to a cell phone tower, you can get to us. If you've been trying the other numbers and couldn't get through, hey, that's internet radio. We're morphing, we're changing, we're growing. We have one number for everyone now, 415-762-1161. You wanted it, we listened, and this hunts any available line that we have. We have five of them. You will make it through to us. So write that number down. Just etch it right in your screen there. That's it. Use whiteout if you have to. 415-762-1161. You can reach us any way you like. Cell phone, landline, Skype. You can make it. Get to the cell phone tower. You can get to us. So what's going on out there with the UFOs? Unidentified flying objects. Well, how identified are they? Are they? We're catching them on digital cameras. We're catching them on movie films. We're catching them in newscasts. What's going on out there? Why are there so many in populated areas, broad daylight now? They're just flying by. Do we see them with our naked eye? Maybe not, because our eyes cannot see things that are flashing too slowly. We barely pick up the strobing of 60 hertz in the fluorescent lights above us. If you want to catch it, though, you can take a bicycle wheel or a baby buggy wheel that's got spokes in it, spin it at about 950 RPM or a little less than that, and you'll see the spokes stand still. You know why that is? That's because the fluorescent lights above your head are acting just like a strobe, and they're freezing the spokes in mid-step, mid-rotation, and that's why you're seeing them. So your eyes can't see the flash because your brain is putting it together. There's a residual holdover from the mind, from the brain, human brain, just can't see that strobing. In fact, you need to get down to about 35, 31 flashes per second. You know, when you go to the movies, it's 29 frames per second. Unless it's digital, it can be much higher than that. That's why when the camera pans across the screen, sometimes you see the still shots as the pan's going by. For digital film, sometimes they accelerate that to 40 or 50 frames a second so that you get a nice, smooth pan across the screen. But your eyes cannot see things when they get down in the low pulses. You miss things. However, cameras can pick it up because cameras have the ability to catch those very slow pulsing things, and especially digital cameras have what's called additive. It takes an exposure, but instead of exposing film, it's taking repeated shots one after the other and then overlaying them one over the other, and you get a composite picture. That's why sometimes you can see things with digital photography that you can't see with regular film. With film, you don't get pixels. You get one chemical reaction that occurs based on the photons that are striking the chemicals in the film. But with digital, it's quite different. You have to work off the pixels in the chip. And that's why the higher the resolution, 10 megapixel, 12 megapixel cameras, you get higher density in that chip. Of course, you don't want to eat up your hard drive by selecting 12 megapixel all the time. I sometimes select 1.71 or 1.7 megapixels so that I can fit more pictures on my little flash drive, and that's cool too. It just means that your photograph is smaller, but you can take the large photograph and you can shrink it, and it becomes incredibly crisp if you use the higher resolution, so we've got the software able to do that. The point is that these UFOs are beginning to show up more because we can detect them more. So we have asked you why they are here. And we got all kinds of answers. They ranged from, oh, they are watching us, they are abducting us, they are teaching us, they are working with the shadow government. Well, tonight I want to ask you where you think they are living while they're here. Do you think there are aliens among us? Do you think there are aliens working among us in public working among us in secret, behind closed doors, with governments, with major corporations? And if so, what are they doing? Now, I don't want to open the floodgates on conspiracy theories here, but I am willing to entertain reasonable ideas as to why they might be here. I know there are as many websites as there are websites out there on why aliens are here and who's working with them and do they really have the solution to new energy and clean ecology and world peace and all of that. I understand that. I just want to know your thoughts on it. I want to know, at the end of the year, as all these things gel and come together chemically to make a solution, what is your bottom line? Are you afraid or are you hopeful that we're being visited from other worlds? And are they other worlds? Are they our world, very old and very advanced, just not wanting to interact with us? And while they're not interacting with us, where are they? The phone number again, 415-762-1161, 1161. Now, some of my listeners say, we are aliens. We are from somewhere else. Well, let me see if I can get a better refinement on that question. Do you mean that our spirits, the things that animates our bodies, comes from somewhere else to here, that most of us are first-timers here, that we're star children, that we're foreigners to this world? Or do you mean that there are some who were not born here who have come here and are walking among us? And there are some who maintain that there are what's called walk-ins. These are beings that were born here, sure enough. I mean, they came here, they animated the bodies, they lived to a certain year, and then they just sort of traded places with someone else. I can tell you that there are many people out there, closer than you think, that have what are called lost time incidents. These are incidents in their youth. Sometimes it's the year 8, year 9, year 10, right in there. And it seems like they go missing for a while, once, twice, maybe a dozen times, and then their abilities change. They become perhaps more scientifically inclined, more mathematically inclined, more able to assimilate pure knowledge and grasp things quicker than their human counterparts, shall we call them. They become more awake, more aware, more mature, more incredibly old, more wise. And some would say that they've been abducted, that they've been taught, they've been changed, they've been chemically activated. Some would say that they're taken aboard craft and they're taught lessons. And there's plenty of record of this in the Maya culture and also in Sumerian languages, Sumerian history, where aliens have come here and taught advanced principles to beings here on Earth. In fact, in Genesis, in the book of Genesis, there's a race of beings called the Nephilim that came to the Earth and taught all kinds of things to mankind: warfare, vanity, sex for fun, all these kinds of abominations. And that we carried those lessons forward through the generations. I'm going somewhere with this because there's a lot to cover on this subject. Some maintain that Adam and Eve were placed here. You know, quite a different process between those two beings. Adam, as we read in Genesis, was made out of mud and had the breath of life breathed into him, which is completely understandable. I mean, pretty much the makings of common clay are just about all the raw materials you need to make a human body, if you were just to build one from nanotechnology from scratch. Now, animating that body, getting it to actually, you know, get the heart to pump, that's easy enough. Heart muscle will just spontaneously start beating, especially with a little electrical jolt, it'll get started all on its own. But to build a full-grown, mature man and then put a life into him, more advanced than our technology, that would be pretty close to, well, I guess it would be God. However, Eve is a different story. after Adam existed on the earth for a long, long time, if you read the book of Genesis, you'll see that he was on the earth so long that he had a chance to name all the animals on the earth. Now, I know some zoologists, and they can't name all the animals on the earth. They can name a lot. That's what they do. They learn genus. They learn class. They learn species. But they have specialities. They have specialties. They don't know every single animal in alphabetical order. That is just too much knowledge. But Adam, it appears, if you give him the credibility, the assumption that he was able actually to name all the animals on the earth, then that means he was here for a long time, certainly more than the average lifetime. At the end of that process, after naming all the animals, right toward the very end of the day, if you think that these beings were created and lived in single days, it could be 1,000 years, it could be 1,000,000 years, it doesn't matter, a period of time. At the end of that period of time, a rib is taken from Adam. This is a process we know very well. Got plenty of marrow in it, got plenty of recent DNA in it, and Eve is cloned. Now, Eve isn't cloned as a male. Eve is cloned as a female from that genetic information. Because, after all, you had to have a being that could procreate with Adam. It wouldn't do any good to make a hybrid. It wouldn't do any good to bring someone from another planet, blue or green or whatever, because they wouldn't be able to have progeny. They had to be of the same genetic makeup. But Eve is a different story. Because to clone means you have to start with a single cell. Now that's a different process altogether. We understand this process pretty well. Eve had to come to term in the womb of a woman. And she had to be born. And she had to grow up. Because God didn't bring Adam a baby. He didn't bring him a toddler. He brought him a woman from his rib. This took the average amount of time. Okay, no magic here. 9 months plus however many years. If she was 14 or she was 30, who knows? But it took the average amount of time. Eve had a belly button, and Adam did not. But they were both genetically equal enough that they were able to procreate. Both of them were eternal beings, which means they could live forever as long as they stayed in the Garden of Eden. But they went through a chemical change. They partook of the tree of knowledge, which could be figurative, it could be real, but nevertheless, they biologically changed, and now they're able to procreate. And now they have become as the gods, knowing good from evil, and they can no longer remain in the Garden of Eden, and they certainly cannot partake of the tree of life and live forever in their sin. And so they are ejected from the Garden of Eden, which spontaneously gave forth its fruits, and they went forth into the wilderness to earn their living by the sweat of their brow. And barely 1,000 years did they live before they passed away. So, eternal beings of eternal parentage somehow biologically changed into mortal, and we are the descendants of that Adam, or at least a portion of us. A portion of us, I don't mean a portion of the people, I mean a portion of our being, is that higher Adam. Because as you'll remember, one of the sons was Cain. Cain did some rather nastiness, which we see every evening on the evening news, was cast out and took a wife from the land of Nod. Well, if Adam and Eve were the only beings on the planet, then there would have been no land of Nod, but there was a land of Nod, and Cain took a wife from this land. So there was higher Adam and there was lower Adam on the earth at the same time. If you want to read more about it, just buy the trilogy, The Ark of Millions of Years, Volumes 1, 2, and 3, and you'll learn all about it. And it's in the Bible anyway, but we just bring in all the other resources and put it together. So now you have it. What is the genetic ratio of higher Adam and lower Adam in the races of the earth? I don't even pretend to have the answer. But I can tell you that human consciousness does affect the way genes choose proteins. So, work on the soul and understand that by the time you get out of the book of Genesis, you have already been exposed to five different races, none of whom are from here. So maybe our friend in Salt Lake is right. We are the ETs. And our spirit self is a direct descendant of the Creator, which sort of makes us star genetically creators as well. And so I ask you the question, what will you create? Not what's in your wallet. What will you create? Interesting. Maybe we'll create a new credit card. What will you create this year? As 2010 nears, don't make idle New Year's resolutions. I'm going to quit this. I'm going to start that. Let's work on the dream. And let's realize that we're not here alone. And we're not going to go through this alone. We're not being asked to go through this alone. But let's go back through the series of questions again. We asked you why they are here. Why are the aliens here? Why are UFOs flying all over the planet? Are they watching us? Are they abducting us? Are they teaching us? Are they working with the shadow government? I want you to share with us why you think they are here. And don't call in and tell me they're not here, because we deal in scientific facts on this program, and we do not throw out data. And one of the pieces of data that we're not going to throw out are direct observations from 67% of the population of the world who have seen UFOs. They don't believe in UFOs. They know that UFOs exist. There's no trying to convince them that they're not here. So let's talk about that a little bit. Call in. We have one number. It'll hunt the best line to get to us. It's 415-762-1161. We'll put it on the website tonight. First program of 2010. It will be live on X Squared Radio, right on the front of the website. If you forget the number, you can always go to bbsradio.com. We're on channel 2, and that is the phone number to reach us anytime we're live. The next guest that we had on in the year was Stephanie South and Jose Arguez. Now, if you don't know who these people are, I understand. But we talked about the start of the entire 2012 awareness. Do you know where the idea came from about 2012 being an auspicious date? Do you know why the Maya built their amazing structures for our day? And do you know what you can do about the upcoming events? Well, we had the originator of the idea of 2012 being significant on the Mayan calendar, Jose Arguez, on this program. He came on himself. He was here for 3 hours, and we discussed the amazing messages left for us by the Maya. He was there when the tomb of Pakal was opened. Now, it was discovered in 1959. It was opened, but not to the public. It was only opened for a single archaeological team. It was in a vertical cave. It was very difficult to open this and get into it. And Jose Arguez was there, crawled down in the cave, and saw the tomb cover for himself. Now, it has since been photographed. It's been traced. It's been redrawn. And we have copies of those redrawings in our book, The Ark of Millions of Years, Volumes 2 and 3. We discuss it in great detail. You understand that Pakal was a giant. He had 6 toes and 6 fingers. His son was handed the kingdom. And in this explanation from father to son, the passing of the earth through a what appears to be a black hole to its present location here around this sun. The earth is not from around here. It comes from this tomb cover. The explanation of the serpent bar the rift in the Milky Way, also known as the vagina of the Milky Way, and the consequences of Earth aligning with it over and over again is both creative and destructive, cataclysmic and wonderful, and that is what is going to happen December 21st, 2012. On the summer solstice, the sun and all the planets will be on one side of the Earth, and the rift in the Milky Way will be on the other side. Now, you heard recently Michio Kaku was on History Channel, and he was talking about this alignment in 2012. And I was very surprised that he said that this alignment occurs every 100 years and nothing happens. That's not true. The alignment of all the planets on one side of the Earth does occur every 100 years, but it doesn't align with the rift in the Milky Way, but once every 2,600 years. In fact, I don't think it lines up the way that it's lining up now, but once every 26,000 years. We are coming to the end of the age, coming to the end of the age of Pisces. Beginning the age of Aquarius. Yes, just like the song says. But in this alignment, there are events that happened in our solar system that are happening again, much to the surprise of astrophysicists. As I said earlier in the program, right at the very beginning, the solar system is passing through an interstellar cloud that physics says should not exist. In the December 24th issue of Nature magazine, a team of scientists reveal how NASA's Voyager spacecraft has solved the mystery. Using data from Voyager, we have discovered a strong magnetic field just outside the solar system, explains lead author Merav Ofer, a NASA heliophysics guest investigator from George Mason University. He goes on, "This magnetic field holds the interstellar cloud together and solves the long-standing puzzle of how it can exist at all. About 10 million years ago, a cluster of supernovas exploded nearby, creating a giant bubble of million-degree gas. The fluff is completely surrounded by this high-pressure supernova exhaust and should be crushed or dispersed by it, but it isn't. It's there, and we're passing through it. Those of you that have heard Big Bang, your whole life, the reason they believe that the Big Bang occurred is because no matter where they look in the universe, the temperature of the universe is the same. It's kind of a lukewarm 1.7 degrees Kelvin. Well, that means that there was a Big Bang and this is a residual temperature. But out there, just beyond our solar system, is a cloud of million degree gas. They couldn't detect it. No way to see it. We didn't send a probe through it. But Voyager discovered it. Because Voyager is the first spacecraft that we're still in communication with that has now left our solar system. And we have discovered this amazing cloud out there. As our solar system passes through this cloud, and very soon, our Earth, we are going to be exposed to new photons, new high-energy photons left behind by the very creative force that built our solar system in the first place. Supernovas. The particles that are concentrated in this cloud are entangled from the very birth particles from this solar system. And we're about to pass through it again. Is it auspicious? I would say so. One of our writers says, perhaps they want to guard and guide us to make sure we reconnect, find the missing link. I think they are extremely sensitive, like a reflection of us. They are just higher evolved since the day consciousness parted. We are out there too. As we are here, so are we there. Now, does your consciousness tell you that is true? Does your consciousness exist out there as in here? I would like to hear about it. 415-762-1161. Give us a call. 415-762-1161. It's a great question. They, meaning the aliens, the beings that are in the UFOs, and mind you, they could be aliens, or they could be ancient earthlings, or they could even be future earthlings that are here now. Because this, after all, is a very interesting place in the cosmos. As my good friend Kevin Smith says, good planets are hard to come by. Maybe we're so rare and so interesting that they've been here all along. I guess the question on people's minds is, are they going to let us destroy ourselves? Are they actually going to let us fight each other to that extent? Interesting, interesting indeed. Well, we're going to cover that in a little more detail, too. That's part of the, well, it's kind of close to the conspiracy theory, about as close as you're going to get on this program. But anyway, we're nearing December 21st, 2012, which is an auspicious date, a date of awakening, a date of cataclysm. You decide. Give us a call and let us know. We also learned from David Wutuni, that the pyramid, the Great Pyramid, is a symbol of the human being. He did a fabulous job of telling us about who built the pyramids and why. Would you be shocked to know that some of you built the pyramid? I want you to call in and tell me why you did it. Come on, reach back into your memory and call in and tell us why you helped build it, and why you are interested in seeing it in this day. Very interesting stuff. So, I also want you to consider, as you do, you know, are you more enlightened for this information? Are you growing? Are you changing? Are you evolving? I think you are. I think you are. You wouldn't be listening to this program. Now, one of the landmark programs we had of the year was, again, Michael Cremo's discussion of forbidden archaeology. Now, if you haven't read that book, I can't say as I blame you, but it is a fascinating book. It's just imposingly large. But I promise you, if you buy the book, Michael Cremo's Forbidden Archaeology, set it in a place you visit on a regular basis throughout the week. That could be any room you like. And just read a few pages a day. I think what you'll find is you won't be able to put it down on some days. Some of the things will be so fascinating and so amazing to you that you just will find yourself making your way through this more than 500-page book. But suffice it to say, or to ask, did you know that humans have been on the earth for millions of years? Oh yeah, man walked with the dinosaurs. He was upright, he used tools, he made jewelry and shoes, and was quite capable of understanding the nature of the universe. Where were you when this was taught in school? Or perhaps you didn't learn it in school. So the question is, are we going to rewrite all the textbooks now? Yes. And we should be hard at it right now, because we don't want to lead another generation astray. 6,000 years, come on. All you Darwinians out there need to come to a realization that we have been here a long, long time in our present form. Sometimes we just haven't been conscious. We're conscious. So, you know, love intertwines all of this. And it's one of the reasons why we come every Sunday to this program. We all have our day jobs. I do too. My day job turns into night job, turns into day job. We never sleep, never give up. We always improvise and overcome, as Clint Eastwood would say. But through all that, it's the love of what we do that keeps us coming back. That's why my producer, Don, is out there. He loves this job. He does it 7 days a week, does it right out of a studio in his home. And it's it's a marvelous operation, people. This is a major, major internet network. It's the biggest in the world. But we come back every single Sunday because we love you, and we love being here, and we love hearing from you. And you can call us, 415-762-1161. Hey, we also conducted a human consciousness experiment at eSETI this summer. eSETI is in Trout Lake, Washington. It is a conference that occurs around the 4th of July every year. eSETI.org, ECETI.org, if you want to learn more about it. But we conducted a human consciousness experiment with John Riley and the Lifestream Generator, and all I can say is, wow. The Lifestream Generator, this was a, I think this was a 5 million volt system that we brought out there. The Lifestream Generator brought in so much energy on so many planes it is hard to describe. Using infrared spotlights and binoculars, whole aerial rivers of orbs came flowing into the area around the Lifestream. More than 130 people participated in this scientific event. If you were there, why not call in and tell of your experiences during the two evenings we ran the experiment? This was phenomenal. Nothing short of it. Now, occasionally, you can take a camera out there and you'll catch an orb or two. Some of you have been practicing with it and you get, you know, clouds of orbs, little wisps of orbs, plasmoids, things like that. How about, what if I told you there were 130 of us out there connected to this Lifestream Generator in a giant Fibonacci spiral, all hand in hand, 5 million volts of energy going through us, and the jovial spirit laughing and playing, and just a bunch of kids out there, 8 to 80, having a blast out there in the night sky, and the cameras weren't picking up orbs. They were picking up the most giant orb vortex. It went way up into the sky, far out of the reach of the cameras. It was like an orb tornado coming out of this life stream and spinning around these people. And then we turned the infrared spotlights on and put on the infrared binoculars. And these were tuned to the red wavelength, not the green wavelength like you see with the night vision goggles. This was tuned to 1,053 nanometers. And I got to tell you, it's totally different than looking at a flash picture. When you turn the spotlight on the energy vortex and look through the binoculars, it was like a river, not a stream, a river of orbs. Flowing, moving, no snapshots now. This is real time. Looking through binoculars, it was like a river of orbs, all different sizes, on top of each other, swirling around each other, moving like rivers through and in and out of the people. It was nothing short of amazing. I wish we could have documented on film, because this was something that you could put music to. You would amaze people around the world. If you missed that, if you weren't there, I think you should go to Trout Lake, Washington, around the July 4th weekend in Washington State. Look it up. It's eSETI.org, ECETI.org. It's inexpensive to register. You can camp. You can stay in a nearby hotel. You can stay in a nearby bed and breakfast. There are ways, and it's inexpensive to go. I promise you. You will have an energy experience and possibly see your first UFO if you've never seen one. This is the place to go. I saw my first one there, and I see one every time I go there. It's really, really amazing. And so that was an experiment we ran this summer, and we did a live broadcast from up there, and it was really, really phenomenal. If you weren't there and you want to know what orbs are, you know, you can go to conferences and you can talk about orbs. Why not go and be there with the orbs, and you'll see what it's like. Also, we had Alfred Lambermont Weber on the program, and we talked about the L Cross moon bombing. Did you hear about that? I think you probably saw a little bit about it. If you listen to this program regularly, you listened about it. Did you watch it on the news? Did you see the YouTube on the bombing? Do you believe the results they got from the experiment? That's my question. Do you think it was as uneventful and benign as what they reported? Do you think it was just a puff of dust that blasted up into the atmosphere and they confirmed that there's oxygen and water in the soil to levels greater than what they expected? Do you think that is it? Or do you think there's more to it than that? Have you discovered anything? Do you know anything out there in the margins of the news? Have you been exposed to anything? Call us and let us know. 415-762-1161. We also had Michal Ledwith on the program, and he's the author of The Hamburger Universe. And amazing stuff. Hey, I've got Haya from BC on line one. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Brooks. Were you just talking about the experiment?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was the first one in line. I just can't tell you how much I've changed since that time.
That was quite an energy experience. Tell us what you experienced.
It was like saying hello to God, if you want to call it that. It's just quite the experiment. The experience was incredible.
Well, was it just electricity, or did you feel an enlightenment? Did you feel light? Did you feel your mind open up? Did you feel, you know, contact of any kind?
Well, I had contact when the ships came over, but with the experiment, it started off physical, then mental, then psychological, and then spiritual. It was just, it just kind of went level to level. And it didn't affect me right away, like physical didn't. The physical, you know, I didn't realize until later on. Like I had gone through a surgery prior to being to the ranch, so I was still healing. And after the experiment, it was like I was completely healed.
Well, you know, I talk to a lot of people that have that experience with the live stream that they, in fact, I witnessed a lady who obviously had Parkinson's disease. She had a very bad tremor in her right arm, and it was it was very profound. I mean, there's no way she could have written anything. It was just a really strong oscillation, and she came into to the shop. I was actually doing some production trials there. I was behind a wall, and she was in the lobby area, sitting on a couch that we had there, and we just had a small version of the live stream running there. And I think it was one of her relatives that brought her in and just, you know, was sitting with her, and about 30, 35, 40 minutes into just sitting there, she's sort of called out like an alarm, like, oh my, and I thought, oh, no, she's fallen down or something, because she was on up in age, you know, and we literally ran around the wall to the lobby and looked, and her right arm had stopped moving. She said it was the first time in 6 years that she had not had that tremor. So she came back repeatedly. I was there for about 6 weeks. She came back repeatedly about every other day. And then 4 or 5 weeks into it, something like that, her therapist came in with her. I mean, she's dressed in white, you know, with the white shoes and everything. And I thought, uh-oh, we're in trouble now. The FDA is here. We're so busted. And she said, look, I'm here out of curiosity because I want to know what you're doing here, because you're having as much effect on her as the best drugs we have. And she's now back in the pool doing her therapy. Now, that was an amazing permanent change that occurred to this lady. I don't know if it's permanent still today, but it was definitely a remission, a strong remission of those symptoms of Parkinson's disease. Something was happening to the synapses of her brain. They began working again instead of going into this tremoring loop. So I believe you, Haya. I believe that something physically happened to you, to your body chemistry or your body DNA, and whatever was bothering you at the time, you wanted it to leave, and it left.
Yes, and it's not just that, but it's like the little things that you have doubts in, you know, and we all have these little niggly things that we never have come to term, and it's like, since I've been back and since that happened, it was like all of a sudden answers start coming to me just out of the blue. Oh, that's why. You know,
so
it's like it's
you're more
not
connected.
Only did I think all my chakras just opened up too as well. I think it opened up the whole chakra system completely. And on top of it, it probably did the hippocampus as well. It was just an incredible experience because it affects you physically and psychologically and spiritually. It's like you created a whole bunch of new neural nets. Mm. And they've all joined together, and it's like you're starting to whole brain think now.
A lot of people do report a strong feeling of euphoria after a live stream experience. Now, that the one that you underwent with me and John and 128 other people, that was a really intense experience because something about that land up there, when we set up this unit was called Consciousness. It's a very, very powerful unit. This thing stands about 6 feet tall. And we had a very large piece of quartz crystal on top of it as well.
Selenite.
You were really close to the source. So you could
I
actually
was right there, the first one in line, literally besides you.
So you could feel the energy.
And it was the intenseness and the power and it was just it's something. Unless you experience yourself, you can't really describe it. Because there are no words that can really do it justice. Very positive as well. Very positive.
And here it is toward the end of the year. Now we're about 5 months, a little better than 5 months after that experience. And you're saying that whatever effect took place there was permanent.
Yes.
Well, that's what I like to hear. I mean, that's an evolutionary change.
It's like, and also, it's in a multi-layered way in through what a human being is like. It's like something has changed to the point that I have this knowing. It just happens, and you know, I don't have the time to explain to other people that I understand way beyond. You know, but how do you tell people this? You know, I'm not carrying any fear. I get annoyed, you know, like most people, but there's an assurity there that I've never had before.
That is so interesting.
Yeah.
Now, this knowing is like, you know, belief is kind of out of the equation now for you, right? It's not like,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Faith. It's like I'm standing on it, and now I'm reaching the next level.
Exactly. And of course, I have an Oculus. I wear an Oculus now because I picked one up from John, and it's probably charged by the live stream. So it's like the minute I put it on, it was like it just keeps on regenerating.
Nice.
I feel an energy from the Oculus.
Mm.
Quite unusual, you know. It's. Yes, there's been a lot of very interesting changes, you know, very positive, too.
Well, I suppose you're going to grab five people by the hand and have them down here next July.
You know what? I'm trying. I'm trying to get a lot of people to go down the ranch this this summer, this coming July, because and get John to come up, because it was just incredible.
Well, you know, John and I set up an experiment that nobody else has been able to go through. Only three people went through it.
Mm-hmm.
I got to tell you, it was really amazing on several different levels. I'm going to call it a Stargate, but it wasn't really a Stargate. It just looked like one. But instead of 5 million volts, it had 12 million volts. And I don't know if we have the courage to do that with that many people, but I'm going to talk to him and see what we can do, because this technology is going to go to the next level. You know, John is always thinking. He's always creating. You know, he used to work for Lockheed Skunk Works. And that's where
the thing is when you really realize the human mind is so powerful with the right type of tool, and where it is, it's a vortex, and it's very positive in there, it's just, you know, you're amplifying it all. It's incredible.
Yeah, I think it really is incredible, but it is credible. It's not so fantastic that it's not true. It's, you know, that frequency is tuned, empirically, it's tuned to the frequency of the human consciousness.
Okay, and this have we gone up to a higher frequency right now? I knew that the frequency of human has rise for some, I don't know why. Weren't we much lower at one point, like a 7?
Yeah, I think the frequency of the Earth was somewhere around 7.8 hertz, and now it's up just over 14. And I think that is because we resonate with the Earth. As the human race begins to resonate at higher frequencies, there's a sympathetic resonation in the Earth itself. Now, some have said it's because technology of man is irradiating the Earth with higher frequencies, and that's driving the frequency up out of the natural range. But I have found at these higher frequencies, even people that I would not normally expect to be awake, to be enlightened, to understand these higher things, do understand them. And I'm talking about, you know, what we would consider average people, what we would consider not those that would normally go out and talk about UFOs and enlightenment and talk about multiple lives and higher consciousness and things like that. You'd be surprised what you pick up at a huddle house in eastern Kentucky. Very amazing things that you would not expect to have heard out of these people 10 years ago, you are overhearing at the breakfast table in the mornings.
Well, maybe one of the reasons is because we're not, you know, like they're talking about 2012 all the time, but I think with the end of the cycle, it doesn't just like happen like 1 minute it's there, and next minute it isn't, you know. I think we've been in it for quite a while.
Yeah,
and I think the energies, I think with the end of a cycle, there must be some type of energy that's coming in that's changing everything. Didn't they say that every 36,000 years at the end of a cycle, isn't there a spike where civilization improves, takes a major jump?
Well, yes. I mean, there are the Cayugas that say we have Iron Ages and Bronze Ages and Golden Ages, and that these are ages of enlightenment or darkening of the human consciousness. That supposedly we're coming out of an Iron Age, going into a Bronze Age. I don't pretend to understand all that. I think it's good. I think it's sound stuff, but I don't pretend to understand it. I'm not an expert on it. I can tell you that every 26,000 years we cycle through the precession, and now we're going from the age of Pisces to the age of Aquarius, and evidently there is an alignment that the Mayans predicted that the Earth and the rest of the planets are going to make with the
sun on December 21st, right?
Right. But you know, like you said, that alignment isn't like instant on, instant off.
No, I think we're probably already in it or have been in it for quite a long time.
Yeah, I think so.
We're kind of coming to the peak, let's say, to the peak of the, you know, the dome part, you know, peak, and then we're going to, I suppose,
crescendo.
Go back down again, you know.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what's going on. Anyway, we're going to be there live as it goes on. So, in fact,
it should be very interesting. I don't believe that it's going to be the end of civilization, but I think with everything, you know, what we do and how we respond to things is, you know, what's going to happen and how we're going to go through it, you know.
Well, I'm not going to live on the coast of the Pacific Ocean while we're going through it. I'll tell you that.
Well, you're here. I'm looking at the ocean right now.
I'd be on high ground, that's for sure.
I'm not too worried right yet, you know. As far as I'm concerned, I think just like to get further out of the city as opposed to, you know, I like the country. I think it's beautiful. It just, connect with nature. It's kind of...
Nothing like BC in the country. I mean, there's
exactly.
No other planet like it.
I grew up in the country as a child, and I've kind of migrated back to the country all the time, so...
Well, you know what they say about country and girls.
Yeah.
You can take the girl out of the country, but you can't take the country out of the girl, so...
That's true,
You're in good shape.
Okay, well, have a great night, Brooks. And
all right. Thank you very much, Haya, for the phone call.
Okay.
All right, bye-bye. So, hour two of X Squared Radio 2009, final episode, if you will, final live broadcast. And we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. Go to the fridge, get you something cold to drink. Get ready for hour two or hour three. We'll be right back. let us fall in love again and scatter gold dust all over the world. Let us become a new spring and feel the breeze drift in the heaven's scent. Let us dress the earth in green, and like the sap of a young tree, let the grace from within us sustain us. Let us carve gems out of our stony hearts and let them light our path to love. The glance of love is crystal clear, and we are blessed by its light. Rumi. Thank you so much for joining us here on X Squared Radio, final broadcast of 2009. Lisa Gerard, Peter Bork, and the poet Rumi. Speaking of the thoughts and music that touch our hearts and lighten our souls, bring us closer to one another as a race. For this hour, I would like to discuss something that we rarely discuss on this program. We don't talk about conspiracy theories very often. We don't talk about great political change. But in this coming year, we're going to see a lot of mighty things happen, things that are going to change everything. Some of them will be marvelous, and some of them will be grand and terrible at the same time. We're going to be here with you through the whole thing. And so if you ever doubt, if you ever despair, this is where you can come, live Sunday evenings between 8 and 11 Eastern Time. And we'll talk about it. We'll discuss it. We'll bring these things from the past, things from the future, and we'll put it together right here on X Squared Radio. We'll be back. 40 seconds. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. This is the third and final hour of X Squared Radio. That's all we've had tonight. Just hour threes, one, two, and three, all with that intensity, that drive. And you can participate by calling 530-413-4511. If you're listening while working on your favorite project at your workstation, that's okay too. We wouldn't be here without the archive listener. You can become an archive listener by just going to xsquaredradio.com, clicking on the subscribe button. It's less than a cup of coffee per month for a year's listening, and there are literally hundreds of hours from 2005 all the way to now. 52 shows, 52 programs a year. We don't call them shows, they're programs here. And we talk about the mysteries of the universe and of the earth with some of the best authors and researchers and scientists out there. I have to tell you, we're not much into conspiracy theories on this program. We don't talk about them often, but there are some political waves of change that are about to come upon us. In fact, there's an author, Great Waves of Change, who we're going to have on the program in January, and we're going to talk about some of these things in more detail. We made a mighty jump forward this year when we spoke with Dr. James Close and his discussion of transcendental physics. Marvelous book. You should pick it up. Dr. James Close, like I'm close to you. And the book is called Transcendental Physics. If you are a member of the archives at X Squared Radio, you can just click on the book cover for that month and just go to the guests link there on X Squared Radio. You can easily find the day that he was on. This is where we learn to consider the universe from the viewpoint of a photon. This takes Einstein to a new level because instead of looking at the universe through relativity, it did not compare the universe to us, but rather to the photon itself. And this was a little different way of looking at it. What would you say if I told you that the Big Bang never happened? What would you say if I told you that it was our observation that slows time down to create distance? We learn to savor the universe in its expanse that is created by our own reality, sort of like the ice cream on top of the hot apple pie. You don't want it to melt too fast, and yet it isn't going to stay there forever. We savor the two flavors together. One forkful or spoonful, depending on how you eat your apple pie a la mode, at a time. If there was a way to consider time as a singularity, we become preconscious or superconscious. We can see the past and the future and bring it struggling to our feet so that we can behold both of them in the present. We can conclude any future we desire. All it takes is an unusual viewpoint, slightly out of the box. Look at the way things are written and stories are told. Look at the way laws are written or postulates are stated. Then paddle upstream and see what you find. Don't go downstream with all the other thinkers. You're just going to end up out at sea. Somebody has to paddle upstream or no spawning occurs. We discussed the nature of dark matter and dark energy. For one thing, who said it's dark? Maybe it's so bright that we can't comprehend it and we just call it dark. Dark compared to what? Perhaps it is even the subconscious of the universe. Perhaps it is the mass that pulls the rest of the universe together. So these are the depth of thoughts. And what happened when we considered the past and the future in the present, as we often do on this program, and we love to do in the third hour, and you can join us easily by just calling 530-413-4511. We don't really discuss conspiracy theories on this program, and that's because there are too many facts to make a clear decision. And what does that mean? Well, it doesn't mean you're going to throw out facts. Facts are direct observations. They can be sorted, treated, filed, just to tell just about any story you want. If you don't believe me, just spend a day sitting in civil court or chancery court sometime. You'll see how facts begin to cloud the issue. It becomes difficult for a judge to make decisions, so he stays away from the facts of the case and only follows the law. The jury, however, makes their decisions based on the facts of the case. Who was hurt? Who got the money? Who was doing the promoting? Etc. So we have come to an analysis of, and this is where we're going to step out just a little bit, this last program of 2009. We come to an analysis of one world government. Oh, yeah. I see the ripples going out there. Don't pull away just yet. I know you have some feelings about this. Many of you are Americans. I understand truth, justice, and the American way. I get it. I get all teary when I hear the marching band play the Stars and Stripes or other national songs, just like you do. I get it. I'm a big country music fan, too. But I want to go a little deeper than that. When we raise the banner of our various clans and prepare to charge across the frozen grass at one another, can we just pause the movie for a moment? Just a moment. You know, approximately two-thirds of the earth is water. 80 to 90% of the population that lives on dry land lives on the coast of their countries, including their major rivers. This means that 7 billion people live in a very small portion of a very small planet, in a very rare universe of planets like ours. And here we are, able to communicate across the world instantly with loving messages, or to solve a problem, or to discuss a point of contention. Why, then, do we still go to war? We have created a new neural network, and I don't really care who started it. I'll give Al Gore the credit if he wants it. That's fine. No problem. Give him the sainthood that he is due. Because this new neural network has connected human minds and human emotions and human hearts that would never have been connected together 14 years ago. For 13 years, the internet has tied us together. I'll ask the question again, why do we still go to war? Because someone out there is instigating the war. Someone sits in an office called Wars R Us and has them categorized and alphabetized, and on command, they can fetch the envelope for the boss. And the boss will add the appropriate amount of money with a little slush, and boom, you have a war. Add the right music and the right angle of yellow journalism, and you have a real winner of a war for the books. Now, the war needs three things to become reality. It needs weapons. It needs an enemy. And it needs people to serve as soldiers. What we want to do is eliminate the last piece of the formula first. Then we want to go straight for the head. We want to eliminate the decider of enemies. I can tell you that we will never get to the Department of Wars R Us. Never do it. The department is also known in the outer edges as the shadow government. These are the ones who launder trillions of dollars and keep millions of contractors employed around the world making weapons. When we realize that for 13 years the internet has been moving information around the planet freely, the smartest of us have access to knowledge and corroboration and cooperation and communication like never before. It is instantaneous. And the faster the net becomes, the quicker these notes can get back and forth between these thinkers. You can gain a PhD every year of your life if you are willing to learn fast enough. Do we have 8-year-olds out there who are consuming knowledge at an incredible rate? Yes. Do we have 16-year-olds, 24-year-olds, 32-year-olds, 40-year-olds that would have to travel the world to go to libraries, to see the paintings, to see the drawings, to be exposed to the formulas and the thinking of the formulas? They can challenge their minds beyond the level of their imagination. So where are the ideas for clean energy and renewable resources? Aha! Well, you see, they run up against the same obstacle over and over and over again. And that is access to capital. 99% of the money goes toward weapons research. $1.03 trillion is the U.S. budget for defense, just passed for the year 2010. Come on, people. We spend $17 billion exploring space, $1.03 trillion building weapon systems. Who are we kidding? This technology that I'm talking about for clean energy, renewable resources, the things that would stop war forever, because there would be nothing to fight about. This technology lies out there in attics, basements and backyard labs and shops all over the world, and it can't make its way off the bench because there are no funds for it. The automotive industry is one of the worst culprits. They have a quality system that doesn't allow technology to reach the automobile. The best ideas, electric drives, pollution devices, charge-as-you-drive technologies, they won't make it. They won't make it to the production line because they're not third-party certified. They can't have access to the automotive industry. Likewise, if you come up with a way to make an incredible amount of energy out of a used D-cell battery, or out of zero point, or out of solar energy, or salt water, or trash, there's no money for it. No investor is going to take a chance on you. The first money in has to be the government, and the government's not doing it because they're spending their money on stuff that will vaporize the human being from around the world or from space. They're spending their money on technology that will eavesdrop on every single email, every single chat, every single cell phone call that's made out there because they're afraid. Now, when you put all these facts together and you think about the forces at work in the world since the earliest recorded history, you can read about genocide, global conquest, oppression, and other mayhem. There have been areas enjoying some kind of peace, either through natural isolationism by being surrounded by mountains or surrounded by ocean, but the rest of the planet has been at war of one kind or another since the beginning of recorded history. This is not the destiny of the human race. The observation is that the methods of war, that is to say, the dehumanization of the enemy on both sides, is the same since God ordered Joshua to wipe out the mountain peoples in the Old Testament. The tactics are slightly different, but war consumes the best and the youngest of both sides. Someone, and it seems it's always the same people, go unharmed. The corruption is somehow contained and covered up from generation to generation. How do we, the people, stand up and say, this is ridiculous. You work for us, and we do not want to fight anymore. We will not participate in this division ever again. Do I need to repeat that? You can play it back if you like. The same people go unharmed at the end of these wars. They're the ones that write the history. They're the ones that take the credit. They're the ones that get elected or unelected over and over again. They're the ones that have highways and airports named after them. They're the saints of the world. While you and I don the uniform because we can't afford to feed our families and we want to join something that will give us meals and health care and some kind of education. But we're tricked because we stand in line and we pull triggers and we kill and we destroy in the name of you fill in the blank. When will we realize once and for all that we are one with everyone? We are all an ocean on this planet, and we cannot die, and we cannot kill one another anymore. There are beings who have come from all over the cosmos to hear right now to remind us who we are. Some of them are young. Some of them have been here since the 50s. I think that's when they first started coming. After the last time that we incoherently, arbitrarily killed millions of people for what? For love? For freedom? Give me a break. Nobody loves and nobody's free in war. everybody dies on both sides a little bit. And yet we live on. And we live and we're supposed to learn. But we don't. Here's the bottom line, people. Do not fear the light. There are some who say they fear the darkness, but they are not being truthful. They fear the light more than they fear the darkness. What is the key to the door to get back to the point where the train left the natural rail? That's the question I ask you tonight. 415-762-1161. What is the key to the door to get back to the point where the train left the natural rail? Now, there are some acceptable answers, and there are some answers that are not acceptable. I can tell you, my friends, some of them, truth, justice, and the American way, America, buy America, isolate America, be American, and spread Americanism wherever you can. Not an acceptable answer. If you've ever traveled abroad and you've listened to CNN that's not originated in Atlanta, Georgia, you're going to hear a completely different story of America than the one you hear every day. You're going to hear a story that might make you a little angry if you're an American, because we meddle, we twist, we pay off, we involve ourselves with a darker sort all around the world, because the enemy of our enemies is our friend, and we arm him and we pay him, and then when he's done with his job, we kill him and throw him in the river. It's true, and we've been doing it for well over 300 years. And before America, there was Europe. And before Europe, there was Asia. It's been happening since man has been on the earth. But I can tell you, something has changed. We are now able to communicate all over the world. There is no reason to have this difference. I explained to you in the very first hour how the young and the old alike took to the streets of Iran yesterday. Yes, they were mourning a religious leader who had passed away, but the religious leader had a message, and that message was not the one that was put forth by the official government of Iran, not the one that's been rattling the saber and threatening nuclear holocaust again. The people are beginning to realize that someone is about to throw a war, and nobody's going to show up. Mick from New Jersey, you're on line one. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Brooks. In answer to your question, I obviously love is the answer. It's the only answer. But I just wanted to say I would be remiss if I didn't call in before the end of the year and at least say hello to you and thank you for being such a wonderful radio producer. I'm a former radio producer myself, so I know it's a lot of hard work, and you and your heart and your soul is into it, and that comes across, and I just wanted to say thank you. I've listened to you for a long time. It's the first time I've ever called, though, so just thank you.
Wow, great gift. Thank you. Thank you so much.
You started to mention non-locality, or at least you inferred it a little earlier, and being a physicist, I wrote down your James Close. I didn't hear that program, his Transcendental Physics. I did read the Tao of Physics and Michael Talbot's book on holography, the holographic universe, and all that stuff. And I appreciate that, and I try to read as much of it as possible, although my background is not in physics. So I do read a lot on my own, sort of. And I will look into that, but I think that the non-locality thing in quantum physics is changing everything so rapidly. It's starting to give people sort of a universal consciousness about them. You don't have to get up to James Gilliland's place at the Yosemite Ranch, and if I had the money, I would go there tomorrow. But I think you can do all this, you know, from the convenience of your own home, so to speak.
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, the first time I was exposed to this experiment was the experiment in 1999, where they took non-locality, at least from a point of entangled particle theory, has been done for a long, long time. It's very duplicatable. But in 1999, they separated two beryllium ions by 11 kilometers, and they demonstrated it again. And I got to tell you, the collective jaw of the physics community was on the floor. Nobody thought non-locality would work that far away, but it did.
Well, and when the Stanford Research Institute started working with remote viewing and all that, even before it became known that we were up to all this stuff, because the only reason we did it is because we found out the Russians were into it before us. So eventually we'll all learn that we're all connected. You know, it is that I can't explain it as well as you could as being a physicist and all, but all I know is that when an electron spins around an atom, you can't determine its speed or its location at any time. So it can literally be in two places at the same time. Is that about right?
Well, you can determine the speed or location, but you can't determine the speed and location.
Okay.
That's a violation of the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. And once you observe it, then its sister particle is automatically observed the same way. So if you reverse the spin,
the wave collapses and all that.
Right.
So it's a series of possibilities. That's the key word, right? Possibilities. Whether it's observed or not.
We think about it, and I pose this question a couple times. In the third book, we call it the beryllium ion modem, because it's basically ionic switching. And, of course, the idea that you can switch and then observe the switch, you have to figure out how to passively observe, or at least have the observation affect something else so that you could turn something on and off. But you've basically got a binary event there.
Right.
So you have an instantaneous remote viewing modem, if you can ever figure out how to observe the switching.
Well, I've attempted lucid dreaming, and I've attempted out of body. I haven't been successful in either one of them yet. I hope to get there. I do meditate. I hope to get there someday, but eventually this is all basically talking about the same thing. And I do believe that we don't have to worry about nuclear war or anything. I think that, you know, they have said that they're not going to allow it, and I believe that. I don't think it's going to happen. You know what I mean by that, right?
So I think that you're among the group that believes that the UFOs, or at least the aliens that are in the UFOs, have demonstrated that they can stop missiles before they launch. They could stop nuclear war anytime they want.
And we continue to shoot at them when we see them. So it's hard to deal with the military, you know.
Well, it's all
anyway.
I
just wanted to throw in my two cents and say thank you for all the great work you do. And I'll be continuing to listen, and hopefully I'll see you up at James's place in the spring or something like that. You know,
that will be awesome.
Happy New Year to you, and enjoy the holiday, and God bless.
Thank you very much. Same to you, Mick.
All right. Take care, Bruce.
All right. So, love is the answer, and here we're going to go to this. Now, we've got about 18 minutes left in the program, so if you want to call in, it's 415-762-1161. If you've never called in before, it's as easy as Mick just did it from New Jersey. Just pick up the phone and give us a call. We'll talk at any level you want to talk. The bottom line is we don't want you to fear the light. There are some who say that they fear the darkness, but they're not being truthful. They really fear the light more than they fear the darkness. And the question is, what is the key to the door to get back to the point where the train left the natural rail? Now, you figure after the train left the natural rail, and that implies that somebody has built an alternate rail, a parallel rail beside the one. Now, train can't just take any road it wants, right? Once it's on the rail, it stays there. It's like being railroaded. And that's exactly what it feels like. So what is the fear that caused these people to forget a deeper level of consciousness? To make these decisions, to keep them in this circle of death and oppression. What spell is this? What needs to happen to awaken them to this circle, so they can just step out of it? All you really have to do is awaken, and you'll see the circle. You'll see that you've been walking around and around and around on a circular rail that someone has built out there and runs you on, so that we go not to peace, but we go from war to war. You know, another piece of poetry, someday, after mastering the winds, the waves, the tides, and gravity, we shall harness for God the energies of love. And then, for a second time in the history of the world, man will have discovered fire. Pierre Delhard Desjardins. That's right. Part of this spell or seizure, the strange thing about it is that it covers itself. Something happened in the past to crack the people's consciousness. We had it. We had it, or we would not have come here. I can tell you it's been there, spot on, from time to time. That French philosopher lived between the years 1881 and 1955, which, by the way, is a very auspicious year. It was the day Einstein died. Part of the spell or seizure is that it covers itself. It hides its own trail. I can tell you that it is not religion that will be the mortar to heal this crack. The event is not recognized as powerful and supreme because the action covered itself up. There is no trace of its beginning, but it does have a beginning, I can assure you. Religion, to some extent, might have been given to people to fill the void with songs and rituals and rules. If people were in their natural state of being, religion would not be called religion. It would be a more natural flow. Religion was to keep people busy, so they would not have to stare at emptiness, in which people might make some deeper discoveries, like a child that has no toys. He creates his own toys. He creates his own games. Through his own imagination, he builds what he needs. He would ask questions, and he would find the answers within himself. For every question we ask, the answer is within us. And I don't necessarily mean within the individual. It is within us. And that's what's so neat about this neural network called the Internet. It has created a way for us as a people to not only realize that we're one, but to act as one, to think as one, to answer and share answers and share love and share communication with one another. And I can tell you, a people that communicates with one another will not go to war. A world that is connected together and realizes they are one will not go to war with his own right hand. He will not go to war with his own spleen, with his own mind, with his own bowels. The chakra that is the earth will become one, and we will realize that we are one with it, and we will realize that the entire universe is folded up inside of us. Maybe as individuals there are a few who can comprehend this, but as a people, as a race, as earthlings, we most certainly can comprehend it. And we can share that comprehension with one another, not through religion. We don't know who gave us religion, but it kept us primitively functioning. The lack that people feel keeps them out of balance. And while they're off balance, it's so easy for someone with a suggestion of a ritual or a rite or a formula to step in and replace your creative ability with something that dumbs you down. Probably the worst offense in the history of labor is something called the minimum wage. What it did is it arbitrarily set a value on an hour of labor. No matter what that labor is, whether that labor is caring for children or sweeping streets or driving screws or painting walls, the minimum wage almost and may well yet destroy the American economy. And it does it everywhere. Everywhere where a value is arbitrarily imposed by a government on anything. It cannot assume its natural level. And I can tell you, if you have a job, if there was no minimum wage and you had a job that paid $2 an hour, you'd have a hard time finding employees to fill that job. What would happen is the job would find its own natural balance. Would you hold the people in poverty? No, because you'd be out of business. If you wanted the best employees, you would pay for the best employees. But the minimum wage has just about destroyed the American economy, because it's not the entry wage that's changed. It's all the hourly wages above it. And government arbitrarily sets a value on it. So let's get back to the core question here, because our goal in 2010, as we near these midterm elections in our country, keep in mind, people, 435 is not a big number. That's a very small town in any country. 435 is the number of Congress people that appear to run the free world. Do not be deceived. This is not the case. For there are tens of thousands of bureaucrats in Washington, in Boston, in Philadelphia, in New York, in Los Angeles, in every single large city in this country, tens of thousands of bureaucrats that run budgets that you will never see, that will never show up on any bottom line. And they have been there for decades. Some of them have been there for 40 years. Some of them have been there for 50 years. I kid you not. There are people in the Department of Transportation that make the decision on the quality and safety of the car you drive that are over 75 years old. Does that mean they're incapable of doing the job? Certainly not. But they've been there since their 20s. Think about it. How much have cars changed in 50 years? Not even the same machine. If you really want to know who controls the United States of America and the free world, it is a loose coalition of bureaucracies fighting over the same checkbook, yours. And the sooner you realize that all of them, every single one of them, down to the last general, the last private, the last civil servant, works for you. You're the boss. And if you don't show up to the office, they're going to do anything they want with your money. If you don't like it, do something about it. I'm not saying this is a political program. It's not. But we're considering our involvement with a race called humans on a planet called Earth. And it's about time that we realized we're all connected, and now we really are connected. We're connected by a free internet radio. We're connected by chat. We're connected by Facebook. We're connected by cell phones. We're connected by Skype. We're connected by knowledge that can be shared openly and freely and instantly around the planet, and our brains are changing. Our children are changing, and there's no difference between us. Our duty as men and women is to proceed as if limits to our ability did not exist. We are collaborators in creation. So do not abdicate your ability. Do not give up your sovereignty to another. You're in charge, and I'm in charge, and collectively we make up a race of beings so amazing that we can actually change a planet and we can alter the consciousness of the universe. That's a message too powerful to ignore. It's a message we want to bring home. And we're going to, in year 2010, the series of guests that we have on are going to be concentrating on the build-up to 2012. One of our first guests is the author of Great Waves of Change. And Mr. Summers will have great things to say. Don't miss the program. And if you missed any of them in 2009, sign up for the archives, go back and listen. Just go to the guests link at xsquaredradio.com. Go down year after year from 2005 to 2009, pick the guests that you want, and you can listen to as many hours as you like for less than a cup of coffee per month. We try to give you the best quality. We try to bring you the best collaboration, the best discussions on the deepest level that we can. And that's why people come here, because you get what you get when you listen to broadcasters of other programs, and that's fine. That has a great entertainment value. But if you want to go deeper, you want to find the root cause, you want to find out how you can be involved, you want to find out what talent you have, dormant, latent, hidden, about to burst forth out of you, if it's inexplicable inside of you, if this spell or seizure that has overcome you makes itself known and you shake it off like shaking off the matrix, and you look down at your own skin, you look in the mirror and say, hey, whoa, wait a minute, who is that looking back at me in the mirror? You're going to change. You're going to awaken. And that's exactly what should happen. Don't fear the light. Feel free to step out of the darkness. Go ahead and let your pupils adjust to it, because it's going to get brighter, and you're going to be here with us. And we would rather have you here than anywhere else. We will always welcome you. We always welcome your comments. You can reach us by email at info@xsquaredradio or x2-radio.com. You can always go to xsquaredradio.com and reach us. You can reach us by Skype, just by looking up Brooks Agnew, and you can send it to us. And by the way, if you do go back and you find an archive link that doesn't work, let me know. We did run some archives in place of programs last year because I was traveling in China and Korea trying to put the electric car company together. By the way, small announcement, first electric truck rolled off the assembly line Monday of last week. I know, listen to the applause. First electric truck rolled off the assembly line. That's nice. All electric, about 100 miles on a charge, and carry 1,000 pounds, and it won't be too much longer you'll see one on the market. Final program of the year. I thank you so much for being part of X Squared Radio for the last 4 years. We're about to start year number 5. I'm Brooks Agnew, and this is X Squared Radio. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.